Sorry, in the North.
Legendary American revolutionary Grace Lee Boggs. That was Grace speaking in 2008 on Democracy Now! Well, June 27th, she turned 100 years old. We'll link to all of our interviews with her over the years. The film American Revolutionary, The Evolution of Grace Lee Boggs, has just won some major awards and is traveling the country. Well, in the week leading up to Grace Lee Boggs' 100th birthday, there were many activities. 500 people came out on Friday night to the African American History Museum in Detroit to celebrate. Grace wasn't able to make it. She lives comfortably at her home in Detroit, surrounded by her beloved community. A very happy birthday to you, Grace. That does it for our broadcast. If you'd like a copy of today's show, go to democracynow.org. Also, a very happy birthday to our very own Isis Phillips, and a fond farewell to our fellows, Anna Osbeck and Samantha Riddell. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman, our website, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Have you heard anything good in the news lately? We have, and we're going to talk about it.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Harder They Come as part of the KBOO at the Clinton Monthly Film Series. The Harder They Come is a 1972 Jamaican crime film. With dreams of becoming a successful reggae singer, a young Jamaican man, played by Jimmy Cliff, finds corruption from his record producers and the drug pushers they're connected to. Again, that's The Harder They Come, Thursday, July the 9th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. As sure as the sun will shine, I'm gonna get my share right now. What's mine? And then the harder they come, the harder they fall. What I got.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 28th annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 2nd through 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Four stages, 100 performers, including the Greg Allman Band, Galactic with Macy Gray, and Buddy Guy. There will be after-hours performances, shows on the Portland Spirit, and much more. Again, that's the 28th annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/waterfrontbluesfestival2015.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503 630-2300.
Some good stuff and a little bad stuff, and we want to celebrate the Supreme Court, a bunch of old fogies and smart ladies, and actually some decent decisions.
Yes.
You
know, so often it seems like all we do is stare into the abyss of climate change and corruption and wealth inequality and environmental degradation and on and on and on. But every once in a while, we win a few.
Well, humanity wins a few.
Humanity wins. Well, we. I'm counting myself.
Oh, okay.
And you even.
Even I are part of humanity.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
Let's go with that. Hey, so what's the deal? What are we celebrating?
Well, the Supreme Court issued its last round of decisions for this session.
Yeah, bang, bang, bang.
Three of them in particular I'm really happy about.
Oh, what are that?
First, the Affordable Care Act was upheld.
Yay!
It's an imperfect,
mediocre, but better than nothing.
And far better than it was before.
Right.
And some of the ancillary benefits and qualities are turning out to be even better than anticipated. Right now, we've got about 14 million more people who have health coverage than had it before the act was passed.
Yay.
Costs are coming in far below what people thought they would be. The rate of growth in healthcare spending has slowed dramatically. And as predicted, the act is closing the deficit gap.
Yes, yes.
And really, the only thing standing between this law and millions of more people being immediately covered are a bunch of Republican governors who are refusing federal money to expand Medicaid.
Yes, on principle.
On principle, right. The principle being poor folks don't deserve health care.
Yes.
Right. So that's the first decision. Very, very happy about that.
Yes.
Secondly, yesterday, in one of the final decisions handed out this term, and what may prove to be the most important over the long term, is that the court struck down a challenge to Arizona's redistricting initiative. As you may know, congressional districts across the country have been redrawn in recent years.
Gerrymandering.
Since 2010, gerrymandering. Really, in almost every case, to favor Republican candidates. Arizona passed a voter referendum to say an independent commission, a non-aligned commission, will set the district boundaries. They did that. It has resulted in much more competitive elections around the state. So naturally, the Republicans challenged this law. It went to the court, and in a wonderful opinion authored by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said, no, sorry. Arizona is free to use an independent commission to set its districts.
Yeah, and it's actually commissioned half Republican, half Democrat. So it's
yes,
very, very
right. And the ramifications of this are huge. If this spreads to other states, as is widely expected, we might actually see competitive democracy in action.
And of course,
at least to the extent possible.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And of course, persons who are gay. Or lesbian or transsexual or
yes.
whatever,
uh-huh.
can marry.
Yes, they can.
Yes.
Anywhere in the country.
Now that,
anywhere.
And that's really cool. And I think that's a very, very positive move. And it's way changed from the time of my childhood and my teenage years when being gay was really, really hard. And people were really persecuted, both legally and socially. And I can remember, and I don't know, we can talk about, if people want to, the horrors of that situation in the high schools when I was in San Diego. And it was pretty awful. But anyway, that's over. And now, persons of whatever sexual orientation can marry the people they love.
They can.
And so they can have the same lousy deal that straight people have.
That's right. They, too, can one day pay thousands of dollars to divorce attorneys.
That's equality, ladies and gentlemen. We're so cynical.
Look, it's tempting sometimes to say that things like marriage equality and the enormous amount of attention they generate distracts us from the real problems that beset us. But I'm here to say to you today that equality is a real issue that besets all of us. And any time that the circle of equals is expanded, especially as dramatically as it was by the Supreme Court, that's cause for celebration.
And to have this court, which has been historically incredibly, I think actually stupid is the right word,
I go with that.
Clarence Thomas. Mm-hmm. What rock did he crawl out from? This guy is really dumb. I'm sorry. He's kind of weird guy. He's got a wife who's a right-wing lady and makes money from right-wing. Really creepy.
Yeah. Justice Antonio Orantadin Scalia has proven himself to be
another creepy guy.
Time and time and time again. He actually said in his dissenting opinion in that case that when you're in a marriage, it becomes a less intimate, less comfortable place. It sounds like he's maybe describing his own marriage and perhaps projecting that onto.
I don't want to go there, but you may be right.
The choice of language he used was curious.
Okay, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. Number to call with us is 231-8187. And we're actually feeling pretty good about the Supreme Court, I think.
Yeah, I'm feeling really good. This has been the best week for lefties, that I can think of in my adult life. The first presidential election I was eligible to vote in was 1992.
Oh, you're so young.
I am so young.
I remember, I wasn't eligible to vote, but I remember in 1960 being kind of amazed. You know, the Kennedy victory was a big deal.
That was a big deal.
And then there was Nixon. Oh, my goodness.
But also in 1992, here in Oregon, there was Measure 9. You remember Measure 9?
Oh, yeah.
Remember Lon Mabon and the Oregon Citizens Alliance?
Yeah, and the guy who worked with Lon Mabon, what's his name, who went to Uganda to create laws against homosexuality?
Oh, yeah, what was his name?
Scott Lively.
Yeah.
Scott Lively is a weird dude.
Fine Americans, both.
And I have real questions about the closeted qualities that Scott Lively mm-hmm. seemed to display in his self-hatred. And I think what he is doing in Africa is so ugly, so vicious.
It's true. But at that time, the issue was what the right was calling special rights for gays and lesbians.
Yeah, right, special rights.
They wanted to make sure that gays and lesbians were not added to the protected categories, categories of people protected against discrimination by the government. Right. They wanted to make sure that didn't happen because that was a special right. Right to not be discriminated against.
Very special.
It's very, very special. But that hit early on a theme that has run through this debate, and that is that religious freedom now is being defined as the ability to be bigoted towards whomever you please.
Right.
And to be able to treat whomever you please as a second-class citizen.
And an interesting sidebar to all of this is the sudden awareness of the incredible persistence of actual activities that are racist and murderous in the South particularly, but elsewhere as well. And the fact that the Confederate flag is the rallying point for all of this. And the question of why the hell is this flag still flying over so many states, including an actual flag of a state. It's really weird. I think it's really strange. I went to the post office to buy some stamps. And I had a kind of discussion with one of the postal workers. And he said, well, he was from Georgia. And he was taught, and he believes, I think, that in fact the Civil War was the war of Northern aggression.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've had people say, well, you know, slaves were getting more calories, were better off than industrial workers at the same period of time in the 1860s. And I had that kind of discussion, and I remember saying, yeah, the only thing they lacked was freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the degradation, the horror, the awfulness, the guilt that should be carried by all of us to deal with the fact of the capture and enslavement of so many people. Anyway,
did you see the video of that woman who climbed the flagpole in South Carolina?
How cool.
And took it down?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and was quoting scripture on her way down and stuff?
Yeah.
Got down.
Yeah.
It was. She was incredible. First of all, what a feat to climb that pole.
Well,
with those few straps that she did,
yeah,
and to come back down, and she did it with complete dignity. She took that flag and she made sure that it didn't touch the ground, that it was handled reverently. She didn't do anything to offend in that regard, and she came down and she says, "I'm prepared to be arrested."
Yeah.
That is a patriot, ladies and gentlemen.
A true patriot. And in fact, the whole bizarre Jim Crow based post losing the Civil War based behavior that has carried the South on and on and on, to my shock, I think actual shock, has persisted, and this kind of good old boy attitude toward the Confederate flag, it's a flag of heroes and all that stuff. Come on, it's a flag supporting slavery. Let's admit it. Let's carry on. Let's get on with it in America, building a more just society. I really, you know, I don't have a romantic view of the rebel struggle.
No, definitely not.
And when they talk about the war of Northern aggression, what Lincoln did at the start of that war was to make sure that the first shots fired, in fact, were an attack by the Confederacy against the United States government.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, and then that's just historically a fact.
And yes, in this revisionist view that you've been talking about as well, that characterizes the war as the War of Northern Aggression, also seeks to say that it wasn't about slavery at all, it was about states' rights. And I bring this up because that has a direct bearing on the Supreme Court's gay marriage ruling.
Right.
They say it was about states' rights and not about slavery, but that is belied if you just go and read the statements of secession issued by each of the rebel states before the war. And they all say it's about slavery.
Uh-huh.
All right. So this woman who took down the flag, her name is Bree Newsom. She said, quote, "We removed the flag today because we can't wait any longer. We can't continue like this another day. It's time for a new chapter where we are sincere about dismantling white supremacy and building toward true racial justice and equality." And to that, I just say hallelujah.
Amen.
So this is a good week, liberals.
Yeah.
Feel free to celebrate.
And leftists and, you know, and people like me who have a very dark and gloomy sense of the history of the world and the United States and, you know.
You know what? That may be the case, but I guarantee you the struggle will still be there once we're done celebrating. So take the time. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy, savor the victories because they don't come along very often.
And
especially
remember,
big ones.
And remember that these events in the Supreme Court decisions reflect a national struggle that has gone on for a long, long time and waged by many, many people of all orientations and colors and so on. This is a people's victory. These are people's victories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love wins, as the saying goes.
It
does. Think about this. Who out there... And listen, I want you to call this show. And I know I'm asking you to step into the lion's den here. If you oppose gay marriage, I want you to call this show.
No, you
and tell
don't.
Us. Yes, I do. Because here's why I'm at with this. Anybody who has read about this issue, followed this issue, seen the absolute unmitigated joy radiating from the people who are now being treated like full citizens in their own country. That is just a thing of surpassing and transcendent beauty. And if you still oppose that, all I can say about you is you're an enemy of love. And how can you be an enemy of love?
So you're saying call so we can say you're an enemy of
yes.
love?
503-231-8187. Let's go to the phones. James, hey, good morning.
Good morning. I am opposed to the totalitarian regime that is now our government defining marriage. I am not opposed to gay marriage. I believe that gays should be able to come together in community and define marriage for themselves, that Christians should be able to come together in community and define things for themselves.
Oh, okay. So why do you have a problem then with this decision?
Because it's giving a minority body and not the people, the ability to find marriage.
Wait a minute. Let me, James, we often have you here because you're very entertaining in your arguments. Let me talk for a second.
This is the thing. You are conservatives, and you don't even realize it.
I don't want to get into that particular argument at this moment. What I'm really curious about is why exactly the question, I've never understood this. Who really cares who gets to marry or doesn't get to marry? What difference, what possible difference, if you're straight or if you're gay or whatever, what possible difference does it make? It doesn't affect you.
You weren't listening to me, Joe. I am not opposed to gays getting married.
Oh. Then what is your problem?
My problem is that the totalitarian regime that we now call the United States of America now has the authority to define marriage rather than the people.
I'm not following you here.
Because you don't understand federalism. You don't understand our federal system. It is people coming together in community. The people are sovereign. They're at the top of the power structure. They rule collectively, and then the government that is closest to the people, the local government, they define marriage, not an all-powerful totalitarian state.
All right, that is an interesting argument, James, and we'll run with it here for a second. And here's how I would respond to that. When in issues of discrimination and issues that come to bear on how citizens are treated, whether or not they are treated equally, the states' rights argument, the local government argument, doesn't hold that much water. That's why when slavery was abolished, for example, when the Civil Rights Acts and Voting Rights Acts, for example, were passed.
14th and 15th Amendments.
But they applied equally to everybody in the country. Why? Because it's not okay to discriminate. It's not okay to discriminate whether or not that's based on a local government decision or on a federal government decision or on a one-to-one individual basis. It's not okay. And that's why these choices have to be made and these decisions rendered and laws passed at the federal level. Because it's not okay, James.
So I cannot discriminate against Wendy's and go buy a hamburger at McDonald's?
That's not discrimination, and I think you know the difference.
That's a consumer choice and pretty...
The point that I'm making is that in order to have liberty, in order to have freedom, one must have options.
You have plenty of options, James.
No, you do not have plenty of options.
I bet even you can find someone who might marry you, James.
The totalitarian regime that we live under that is controlled by genocidal monsters that are waging genocide on the poor in this nation, they're laughing at us. They're laughing at us as they completely enslave us.
Okay, I'm gonna let you go, James. I appreciate the opinion. I don't quite get the point, though, and I think it's good to hear from you because it is definitely a very different position from most of our callers. But thanks for the call, man. Take care.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page if you like. That's facebook.com/AbeandJoe. And I'd like to take just a second to congratulate Engineer Steve for taking part in the annual Naked Bike Ride. That really took some courage.
I thought you were going to say cojones. I was going to really whack you some. All right.
Congratulations, sir.
Actually, it was just a lot of good, clean fun.
Well, I would hope so. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Harry, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I changed my views on gay marriage. I was against it. In fact, I voted for the measure in Oregon for marriages between a man and a woman. What changed my mind? I changed my mind was because if you remember, about a year ago, it was challenged. Our measure was challenged, and it was defeated by the Supreme Court. And I called into this program. I mentioned how miffed I was that the judge who ruled on the case was gay himself. Well, we didn't know that. And the Attorney General did not challenge the ruling by writing a brief at all. And so I was quite miffed at that. So I decided I'm going to do some really serious research on this instead of just hearing what the news sound bites say. Now, if you remember my religious bringing up, being a Catholic, kind of prevented. I just took their view by choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, okay, I'm gonna do some research. Okay, the first research, and the end of the research came up with this: it's a civil contract between two people,
mm-hmm.
and the government has to enforce this, not the churches. So the government cannot discriminate.
Right,
that's right.
Okay, so I said, wow, I don't know why I never thought about this. So I started going back and actually reading the rulings with the Ninth Court
circuit,
said,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and also with the judge who struck down the Oregon law, and they were right.
Well, I think it's important to understand something that a lot of people don't seem to get. It is a contract. It is for the protection of family, per se, and of the rights of the individuals who enter into such a marriage and their children, if there is issue from that relationship. That's number one. Number two, in France, for example, it is very normative, very normal, in order to be married, you go to the city hall and you essentially agree to the relationship, which is a contract. Then, if you wish, and you don't have to, you go to your synagogue or your church or your mosque, whatever, and there you have a pledge of commitment related to your religion. The two are totally separate, and the role of the state is purely to ensure and protect that contract.
That is correct, and so that's why I wanted to apologize to both of you, because I changed my
Well, good for you, man.
Yeah, man.
But my complete view on this. And also, I want to thank KBOO Radio, because some of my research was actually listening to some programs.
Excellent.
Brandon Roses was very instrumental.
Good.
I got to congratulate you, sir, on two counts. First of all, I think you behaved exactly as a thinking citizen in a representative democracy should, meaning you did your research, you did your homework, you went out there, you consulted legal opinions, you did some background research, you did some reading, you did some listening, and that's what you did. You informed yourself. And secondly, it's hard to challenge one's longtime, deeply held beliefs, and you did that. So that was a courageous act, and I commend you for it.
And another one that changed my view also was actually Pope Francis the First.
Yeah, interesting guy.
Well, what happened was I got the Pope app, which is free. Everyone should probably get it because he's an amazing man.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was getting his views of homosexuality because when he first became Pope, there was some issue, some controversy about what he said. So I completely read it. And what his... what he said was, who am I to judge?
Yes.
And when I heard that one, and the same thing here, who am I to judge, considering I've never been married, I never signed on the dotted line, so he was correct on that point, and also on Holy Thursday, I think it is, right before Good Friday,
mm-hmm.
Pope Francis actually washed, it was a tradition of the Pope to wash 12 individuals' feet representing what Jesus did.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the people he did was a transsexual, and the transsexual was allowed to take communion. So I said, oh, this is great. Then also what happened was, everyone forgets, is the Irish referendum on
yes,
gay marriage.
Yes.
Oh, dear. And the Pope could have gone to Ireland, wagged his finger, saying, no, 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 and it probably wouldn't have passed. But he
yes,
did.
You're right about that. I hadn't considered that.
In Rome.
Yeah, because so, Ireland's a wee bit Catholic in orientation.
Yeah.
That's an extraordinary thing.
A wee bit Catholic.
Yeah.
Never mind. Okay. Listen, I really am glad that you've been able to think the issue through, and I really appreciate the research you've done, and I really thank you for the phone call, and I'm glad this station had some impact on your thinking.
Yeah, good on you, man. Well
yeah,
done.
Yeah, that's great. Now I have to go to the confessional. KBO has their own confessional.
So yeah, it's
now
true.
I have to go there and confess.
With the Contessa. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Here's what Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote in his majority opinion in the gay marriage case. This was the last paragraph in his opinion. No union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than once they were. As some of the petitioners in these cases demonstrate, marriage embodies a love that may endure even past death. It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage. Their plea is that they do respect it. They respect it so deeply that they seek to find its fulfillment for themselves. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right.
Yeah.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, it is actually well written, and actually I absolutely agree.
Let's go to the phones. Annalisa, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, good for the Supreme Court, of course. I must confess that I have gotten an education on the Confederate flag. Being foreign-born, I knew, of course, I learned about the Civil War and about the slavery issue, but I did not identify that the Confederate flag, that it represents slavery in that matter. So the last week or so, I have gotten a really good education on cable and different programs about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Bree Newsom, in my humble view, is a hero.
Absolutely, she is.
To climb that pole. And what she said, this thing is coming down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But tonight, the World Cup Women's Soccer, the USA, is playing Germany.
That's right.
That's what I wanted to announce.
On artificial turf, I might
That's
add.
That's right. These are the two best teams in the world. It should be a cracker of a match.
Right. That should be an awesome match. So knowing, Abe, that you are just like myself, more or less, a football, soccer.
Yes, I am. A fan.
Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that. And,
is it on TV, by the way?
Yes, yeah, 4 o'clock.
Pardon?
4 o'clock this afternoon.
4 o'clock this afternoon.
What thing? What channel?
Fox.
Fox!
Yep. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for once, they're doing a good thing.
Okay.
Anyway, have a wonderful day, gentlemen.
Thank you. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
You know, Fox is strange, right?
Fox
is strange. They've got this news arm, this news channel, that's just full of vitriol and hate and misdirection and misinformation.
Well, lies.
On the one hand.
Straight lies.
But on the other hand, they have this entertainment division that has produced some of the most subversive stuff ever to come out on broadcast TV. The Simpsons, for example.
Right.
One of the great satirical creations ever. Also made from Fox.
And Justified, which was a very good law enforcement show.
Yeah. That's strange, Fox. Yeah. I guess wherever, you know, whatever we'll pay them, they'll do.
Well, it's a little more complex than that, but I do agree that Fox, as a production company, has done some really great work. Fox News, which is basically the Murdoch machine, is really disgusting. And what's also kind of scary is that it has this audience, largely older people, who absolutely only get their news from it. And it is absolutely, absolutely, totally full of nonsense.
Hmm.
So that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, you're right. Before we go back to the phones, a little background on what has come to pass and what will likely continue to happen since the gay marriage ruling from the Supreme Court. There's all kinds of people pushing back on this, particularly in the Old South, speaking of the Confederate flag.
Mm-hmm.
Pastors organizing to say that they will refuse to marry same-sex couples.
Oh, I want to be clear about this. I think any pastor who doesn't wish to marry, to join people together, has the right to do that.
I would agree. Yes.
I mean, first, this is why I like the separation between the contract and the religious element.
Right. And I would go further and say that the pastors who are coming out and saying this know perfectly well that they can't be compelled in a religious context to marry people they don't want to marry.
Certainly not.
But they're making a stink about it anyway. Because it makes them look good.
Well, and they're trying to create the image that this is an enforced behavior that they have to do.
Right.
They don't have to do that.
Right, that it's an infringement on their religious liberty.
Right.
But it is not. It is, what would be an infringement on their religious liberty as if, for example, if they were forced to do it, but they're not.
No.
So also, there's on the state side of things, the government side of things, there's been pushback by county clerks, for example, in parishes in Louisiana. We've had examples of people refusing to issue same-sex marriage license. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, essentially gave state officials his tacit approval to deny these licenses to same-sex people on grounds of religious liberty.
Well, I see, that's a whole different story. If you are to obey the law in your position as a public servant,
yes,
you should be a good servant of the public. And that
Agreed.
Means you do what you are required to do under the law. If you don't want to, get another job.
Yeah, right, exactly. If your religious convictions prevent you from carrying out your job, then, yeah, perhaps another job might be better for you.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO and at 9 Alternative Radio, Rob Larson, author of Bleakonomics, speaks on fossil fuelishness.
That's a little pun.
Yeah. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features in-depth reports on the Supreme Court saying yes to gay marriage and yes to more tortured state-sponsored lethal executions.
You know, that's the dark side of what the courts have done. And we should mention this because it's really important. Essentially, the Supreme Court said, and I can hardly believe this, but they said in a 5-4 decision that you can use any method whatsoever with any amount of suffering, which violates the Constitution, the Eighth Amendment, and so on. You can torture someone to death, the equivalent of burning them at the stake or chopping their arms and legs off or whatever, using medicines that are really dubious.
I knew you couldn't get through a whole show just celebrating.
Well,
I knew you'd have
No, and I think it's really a horrible thing. I mean, I don't believe in the death penalty anyway, but as far as I'm concerned, and I want to say this because I never get a chance to say it, if you really want a death penalty, there are two ways to go. You shoot them or you chop their heads off. And the guillotine is a great device for that. How dark can I be?
You heard it here,
ladies
and gentlemen.
How dark can I be? But I want to be clear. I am against the death penalty. But those are obviously methods that are instantaneous.
True. At 11, on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts celebrates theater sound design with veteran Portland sound designer Jen Raynack. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Portland abstract painter Judy Cook about Portland in the 1960s and 70s, design and architecture, and her method idea of solving a painting like a problem. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported radio station.
Guillotine.
Should we go back to the phones? Let's do that. Sheila, good morning.
Good morning. Well, certainly not to take away from the good news, I have to cynically smile at the timing that they announced the good news. Here we have fast track passed, and nobody says a word about it because everybody's so overjoyed at gay marriage and the Obamacare thing. Mm-hmm. And I think they're wonderful, but why ignore? I mean, they covered up the fact that something so devastatingly bad for the country has been passed.
No, you're right. I mean, I think one of the things is that all of us have a kind of limited supply of attention to the public issues, and the press doesn't really cover things very well, either the broadcast press or...
And they've done this over and over and over.
So you think it's like a conspiracy?
Every time the government does something rotten, there's something happens. It can be an explosion someplace, a terrorist attack someplace, a major accident, an oil train blows up, but that will get the attention of the public instead of what the government is doing.
Well, it's
and it happens almost every time.
So what I'm trying to get at is, do you see it
is
as
it
a deliberate conspiracy or simply what the media does?
Well, I think it's a combination. It's collusion. I mean, let's face it. Who is the media representing nowadays?
Well, of course, they're corporate.
Right. But we're talking about two branches of government. And if you're bringing in questions of timing, that implies that maybe there was a conversation between the judicial and legislative branches and they decided to do these things around the same time. I don't know if that happened.
I don't think so.
Well, it's too much of a coincidence.
I appreciate the concern, because it is quite a coincidence, and yeah. it's certainly the case, and I think it's over and over again. Well, and I also think it has a lot to do with the corporate media, which, by the way, NBC did a very interesting thing in dumping the hairy guy, the hairy yeah. funny headed guy. What's his name?
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I like John Stewart's name for him better, but we can't say that on the air.
No.
Hey, listen. Yeah. Thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
it. And I think it's a good question. I think it raises some interesting issues.
It does, yeah. So just a brief aside about this woman who took down the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
Bree is her name.
Yeah.
She met with a small group of concerned citizens of all sorts, and they talked about this plan. And they divided up the roles. They decided that the role of climbing the pole and taking down the flag would go to a black woman, but that a white man would be the one to help her over the fence that surrounds the flagpole, thus symbolizing that their desire to get rid of this stupid, ugly symbol crossed over race and gender lines, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. And then she went on to say this: "I removed the flag not only in defiance of those who enslaved my ancestors in the southern United States, but also in defiance of the oppression that continues against black people globally in 2015, including the ongoing ethnic cleansing in the Dominican Republic. I did it in solidarity with the South African students who toppled a statue of the white supremacist colonialist Cecil Rhodes. I did it for all the fierce black women on the front lines of the movement and for all the little black girls who are watching us. I did it because I am free."
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I think it's very cool. I think it was a beautiful act. It was nonviolent. It was appropriate. And in fact, I think it's time that states, look, people individually have a right to fly any flag they want, even the ugliest sorts of flags. Well, also the Confederate flag. But states, the governments of states and the counties and so on in the South, should not be flying the flag of a defeated, bad, racist government.
Treasonous government.
Yeah.
And not only that, that government stood for the chattel slavery of other human beings.
Right.
Right? So maintaining that symbol on an official piece of property, on a government piece of property, is a not so subtle way of reminding the descendants of those slaves who's in charge.
Absolutely.
It needs to come down. I'm glad it did. And kudos to this woman for her courage. Let's go to the phones. BT, good morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, I haven't been able to call in about 11 weeks, so...
Welcome back.
I better make this count here, because, you know...
All right, talk fast, BT.
Well, the districts, that court ruling on the districts...
Right.
I agree with Abe. Abe, you know, you just never miss a chance to dump on, let's say, Republicans in this case.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's Arizona, that, of course, is the party that complained, but it's really both parties. In California, voters, they had the same thing in California, oh, I don't know, 15 years ago, and it was the Democratic Party, the majority, that they hated this, but the voters made sure that it stayed. They both loved to draw these districts when they have the power. That's how we were able to get districts that can elect, you know, people.
Oh,
like
yeah, you're
Cynthia,
right. I don't exempt
McKinney or guys that think islands float. You should see the shapes of some of these districts. So I believe that districts should look sensible, you know, compact. Maybe they can have some obvious differences, you know, like urban versus a rural district makes sense without getting too crazy about the shape.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's on that one. Now, the Obamacare thing, you mentioned some things. Oh, wow, look at all the people who have insurance now. I don't know. Do you really need... I don't know. This thing was like 2,000 pages, and it was like 20,000 regulations coming.
So what?
Look, the reason that a lot of people couldn't afford it is because, you know, the government has been dictating for years what needs to be covered. In other words, I couldn't go to an insurance company and say, okay, I would like to get insurance on just the, like cherry pick some things and then maybe have a different list and have a different deductible on that.
Well, that's not the government. That's the insurance industry.
Oh, no. They could make, if that's all they could make money on was selling you things. And it is a fact that until very recently, you could actually go out and get what insurance is actually supposed to be for. Catastrophic. I know people who've had insurance policies to cover some things that were going to be big down the road, like let's say if they had heart disease, heart attack,
I see what you're saying.
Problems
okay.
with cancer, you know, but the this thing where where it was turned into something where, like, even just routine doctor visits are something that's covered by insurance, it really did not do a thing for keeping prices down, because everybody's just lining up.
But the prices are going down.
Unfortunately, we can't go back 60 years and stop that system in its tracks and let it grow in a different direction.
I'm having a hard time having a problem with people lining up for routine preventative visits to the
doctor. Well, it's just that they all go. Everybody goes and they say, okay, here's my $50 copay, and an insurance company pays the other $100. That's a lot of money going out. And, you know, and I'm not saying... You know, insurance companies, they are a business, but it also costs government. Government just doesn't
money. It sounds like you're suggesting maybe a simpler system like single payer would be a better solution, and I'm with you on that.
Well, you know something? I hate to admit it, but there would probably be less bureaucracy, but that's not the way I wanted to go. I wanted to go in a different direction, like try to repeal crap, like allow people to use an insurance company that's headquartered in another state, have nurse practitioners be able to do more, break up the government / American Medical Association controls over how many doctors we're supposed to have, because they'll make those, they'll control how many we have 10, 20 years down the road, and then they admit that they made errors, and that's why we have a shortage. I mean, who the hell are they to do that? Of course, it's the government that allows that.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Is it a good or a bad thing that 14 million more people have medical coverage now than
that's the wrong question.
No, it's not. Answer it. What do you think? Is that good or bad?
That's like saying if government took over all the farms and all the food in the country, and then they started feeding some people who were hungry, ask me, is it good that more people are eating?
No, it's not like that at all.
I'm not going to answer that question. You're asking the wrong question in the wrong way.
Okay. Wait, listen. Thank you for the call, BT.
All right.
Hi.
You know, it's interesting. Certainly this Obamacare, as it's been called, is far from my idea of what ideal healthcare system should be. On the other hand, given the limitations and the power of the insurance industry and all these other practitioners, and the fact that naturopaths and so on are marginalized within the system, which is not the case in places like Germany, given all of that, this is a gross improvement. And it means that poor people have a chance to get decent care. And I want to emphasize another aspect of this. Previous to this, people ended up in the emergency room, which is the most expensive and not necessarily the best care. And they wait until they have to go in. And the emergency rooms are crowded with people who have things that could have been attended to weeks, months, days earlier. And this will help ease that. The other part of the problem is the fact that we still have too few people being able to afford to attend medical school and get through medical school and enter into the practice of medicine. And that's not yet addressed.
Also, those people who do go to medical school often are tempted to go into a specialization rather than into general practice, because they feel it's the only way that they can recoup the massive debt that they've incurred.
Right. And in fact, what we need is a huge number of family practitioners and general practitioners, and we aren't getting that.
And we should also point out that we talked about the 14 million people who have coverage now because of the Affordable Care Act. And we've talked about those states that have refused to expand Medicaid, which is sort of a head scratcher. That's purely an ideological stance, because the federal government has offered to foot the bill for that. Right. It costs these states nothing to opt into the expansion of Medicaid. If they were to do so, that would be another 4.3 million people
right
immediately.
Off the bat. Like that.
Like that.
Yeah.
Who would have access to health care. And these are obviously people who qualify for Medicaid. So they're poor, which means probably there's a lot of good that preventative care would do them, not to mention finally getting treatment for some of the chronic conditions that they're experiencing.
Right. I mean, there's this huge backlog of people who are deferring medical care. And that is going to be, that would be the initial expense. It turned out to be less actually cost than was expected, which is interesting.
Yeah. And you can easily find a map of the states that that have refused to expand Medicare. Mm-hmm. And you'd probably be very surprised, or not, to see that it looks a lot like a map of the free states and the slave states before the Civil War.
Funny thing,
yeah.
That.
Mm. Okay, let's go back to the phones.
231-8187. Who's there?
Who do we got, Steve? Brian, good
this
morning.
Is,
hey.
Me? Brian.
Hey, what's up, Brian?
Boy, you really hit a hot button issue for me with medical care, but I'm not going to ramble on because this is a hot keyboard, hot site. Supreme Court. I don't know if you guys are aware, but both Scalia and his lapdog puppet Saint Thomas are members of Opus Dei.
Did you say Saint Thomas?
Thomas, yeah.
Are they both? They're in Opus Dei.
Oh wow!
The people who wrap barbed wire around their thighs. Those people.
The secretive Catholic cult.
Yes.
And you know which forswears them to be. To uphold the dictates of Rome before anything else, so they shouldn't even be on any bench, you know, which is reflected in their consistent voting for the bad things. I just wanted to pop that into the mixture because I could ramble on, but I know there's other people listening, waiting. So I just wanted to throw that into the mix, see what it brings up. Bye.
Bye. I haven't thought about Opus Dei in quite a while. That is, those of you who don't know, that is a cult within the Catholic Church that believes in flagellation and mortification of the flesh.
Yeah.
It also believes in a very conservative view of the Catholic faith, which I guess you'd call fundamentalist in a sense, but very different, for example, than the beliefs of the current Pope, who I think actually comes out of the tradition of a whole other tradition in Latin America of liberation theology.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a big person to pay attention to the papacy and to the politics of the papacy, but it is interesting.
Well, he's certainly the most progressive pope in my lifetime. Well,
I think the most progressive pope, period.
Period. Yeah. I think that's a fair statement.
You know.
Yeah. So we got a couple comments to the Facebook page. John writes in to say, for anyone who doesn't see marriage as a civil union and a contract has never gone through a divorce.
Good point.
Who gets divorced goes before a priest or a rabbi or anything, but rather a divorce court judge.
Well, the only exception to that in the world that I know of just offhand is within the tradition of Islam and oh, some really? Orthodox Jews.
So a religious figure can dissolve a marriage.
Theoretically, in certain circumstances, in countries other than the United States.
Right. Okay. Corey also writes in to say, the sick irony of Bree Newsom removing the Confederate flag from the South Carolina state capitol was that two black officers had to arrest her immediately after, and a black city worker had to re-raise the flag. There is still work to be done. Yeah, that's true.
Hey, well, this is an example of people doing the job they don't probably want to do, but if you're being paid and you've made a deal to do the job, then you do it.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yet another example of why, you know, if you can't do the job that you've been hired to do, then maybe another job ought to be better for you.
Of course, they could have a strike and you could organize a union of workers that would say, hey.
Now you're talking like a communist.
I hope so.
Let's not be crazy now, Joe. Come on.
Sorry. Go ahead.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. So, Joe, looking back at this rare good week for liberals, what stands out for you? What is the most exciting?
There's two things that really, really excite me. First of all, is the right of people to marry, period, and to follow the dictates of their heart. That's really great. And the second thing is the upholding of the right of states to create a more fair system, not gerrymandering, for the decisions on congressional districts, which has the potential to create a more just Congress.
Yeah, I agree. I think as wonderful as the gay marriage decision is, and as important as the Affordable Care Act decision was, I think going forward, it's this redistricting decision that may have the biggest impact on our democracy and how it functions.
Yeah,
I'm glad for it. I hope that that spreads all over the union.
Well,
I hope it's the end of gerrymandering as we know it.
It could be the end of gerrymandering, but then there's this phenomenon of the oddly, it's mostly. Mostly, but not totally, states that were part of the old South, the secessionist South, that are most reactionary and most unwilling to do anything to create more justice, particularly for the people in those states who are working class and poor.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Many of whom are persons of color.
There's something else this week that's rather interesting.
What's that?
As of tomorrow in Oregon, you can get high without being a criminal.
Oh, people were getting high before that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I talked to a couple of dope dealers. Yeah, I did. And they said, we don't care. We're not going to. Our business won't change. this state mandate, taxes. Come on. These are the last entrepreneurial anarchists in our state, probably.
Yeah, probably so. You know, I thought that when legalization finally came around, I'd be more, well, fired up about it, so to speak.
Oh, fired up about it. Ha, ha, ha.
But now I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Cool. Good. But what I really hope happens is people get released from prison.
Well, and I'm glad you raised
possession.
That. There are so many, you know, the prison industrial complex is full of people who are in prisons for no real good reason. They haven't done a crime against humanity or against individuals. They've just followed their custom in choice of inebriations.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's time to let them go.
Yeah, I agree.
But of course, the industrial aspect of that system is going to probably resist that.
Well, yeah, it's good money in imprisoning nonviolent offenders.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Barth, what's going on?
Well, I don't know. I didn't hear the first part of your show, sadly, although I've enjoyed the last part. Anyway, the health insurance mandate that has come out, you know, I'm glad that it's been upheld. But one of the downsides of this, which was on an earlier KBOO presentation, they talked about the high deductibles, so that if you're a poor person and that you're mandated to buy the insurance, mm-hmm. and you go in to see the doctor, your deductible can and sometimes be hundreds of dollars, even up to the point of $2,500 a year.
Is that right? I don't know.
I believe that's the case. So, you know, essentially the idea is that you have health care, but in reality, unless you got a couple of grand, you know, laying around that you can lay on the table to match the fees or to pay the deductible, mm-hmm. you still don't have any health care and you're still paying for it.
Yeah, this is something I have to confess not having adequate knowledge to respond to, and I'm sorry that I don't.
Well, your response isn't necessary, but that might be something that's worth exploring in a future show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as far as talking to dope dealers, I'm assuming that you're talking about mostly pot dealers versus heroin dealers.
Yeah, I don't have much truck with heroin dealers. You know how that is.
Just to clear that up for the general public.
Sure.
I'm so happy about the removal of the Confederate flag by a passive force. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
And that she was so articulate. And
yeah, it was a good action. It was really a good action.
Well, and it was the right action at the right time,
mm-hmm.
and it's a supportable action even by people who are not themselves motivated to step out, because it was heartfelt, it was articulate, and it was not primarily meant to be offensive.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about people who hide behind the flag in their politics.
Yes.
And the use of the Confederate flag as the heroic symbol of those who lost their lives struggling for the rights of the states is pure unadulterated, I can't say the last part of this, but bull.
Right.
I mean, it's about an industrial, an agreement between the masters of the loom, the makers of cloth to sell in world markets, and those who grew cotton. And the cotton growers had slaves, and the Northerners colluded in all of that. And the breaking up of that system, which at least produced wages for individuals in most places, was never complete. Because Jim Crow was installed, all kinds of efforts post-Reconstruction were made to put black people and poor people in many places. Oh, here, I've just gotten handed this. Obamacare guarantees wellness exams for free, but these are just marketing opportunities for expensive treatment, says our wonderful operator of the board, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. I think you're correct, but there's so many overlays to the sentiment of state rights and the Confederacy and the lost war and the rending of the country. I mean, there's lots of nuances. Not everybody that that embraces this is for, you know, putting their boot heel on the neck of a black person.
Yeah, I don't want to say everybody is that way. And yet, as I travel in the South, and I have a lot, and I was involved in civil rights stuff, I'm that old. My impression is that it's really about the oppression of black people. Hey, we run out of time, man.
Thanks for the call.
I have to let you go.
And thank you, everybody, for helping us celebrate.
Yeah.
A rare good week.
Yeah.
And we'll be back to the salt mines next week, I'm sure.
The salt mines.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned to KBOO, the best in music and public affairs.
Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground grad school series, Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally. Classes will start July 8th and continuing for 4 weeks on Wednesdays at 7 at Southeast Uplift in Portland. Classes will focus on issues such as federal policy toward Native peoples, inequities Portland's Native peoples face, blood quantum, and more. It will also address contemporary ideas of privilege, white fragility, and the complexities of intersectionality. Again, that's Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. at Southeast Uplift, 3534 Southeast Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Rob Larson, author of Bleakonomics, speaks on fossil fuelishness. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features in-depth reports on the Supreme Court.